Radio Chelly Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
June 6, 2023, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar, and this is the show you're looking for. How do I know that? Because if you're not looking for the O'Chelly Effect, you ain't finding the O'Chelly Effect. So welcome to it. Now, I know most of you are catching this further on down the stream via your Fondle Slab of Choice, your applicable application, podcatcher du jour, whatever. So you could be listening to this at any time, in any place, et cetera, et cetera. No matter who you are, where you are, when you are, welcome to it. So Tears Day, the second broadcast day of the week for the network. And again, going after different types of guests this time. All right. I was getting a little bored with some of the people I had on, and I think you guys were too. We're going to actually revisit a topic here tonight, and we're going to do this with a fascinating individual that I think has an interesting energy level, if nothing else. Okay. Now, there's a lot more to offer here, but I'm going to let her explain that to you. Her name is Diamond Drip. Okay. Now, Diamond Drip, no, I didn't stutter. That's what it sounds like. I don't know where the name came from. Maybe I'll get into that. Ask her where that came from. I'm thinking that's not on her birth certificate, but we all know about how the legal fiction works and all that good stuff. Who cares? You call yourself what you want to. Anyway, what are we talking about? A couple of years ago, if you're a longtime listener, you certainly know that I did a long series on what really saved my life. Let's be blunt. I felt like I was being destroyed by the PTSD, which I had carried for decades. And, well, you know, just shot in the dark experimentation. After reading about it, I said to myself, psilocybin would be a good thing. I announced that on air. I told other people. And suddenly, people that wanted me to be well gifted me with psilocybin. And made sure that I had a fairly copious amount of it. Now, I don't give amounts. I don't give suggestions. Nothing I'm about to say or my guest is about to say should be qualified as medical advice. But even the military today is looking at how can we help people with this stuff. Now, I describe PTSD, but of course there are studies out there. There are efforts. There are individuals who are proclaiming that this stuff, and this is not new, by the way. It's just newly getting attention in our current age that there were people saying, you know, this stuff, which does come from the earth, which is a naturally occurring thing, it might provide possibilities of repair for individuals who might have suffered damage one way or another. As in my experience, if you don't recall it, you don't know about the psilocybin series that I did, it's still archived on the website. I'm thinking about re-releasing it again, because a lot of people were listening to it on YouTube and we don't have that channel anymore. But look, all of my pronouncements, and I know I went to air about 10 minutes late on the live stream, but if you're hearing the podcast, you don't care. But the podcasts still exist out there. They are still up on my site. They're in a few other places. I've tried to make sure that information stays out there, but I may have to put it out again because my guest is going to talk about it, and I don't think she was going through PTSD. I got a different idea about her story. But I'm not going to tell it to you. I'm going to let her do that. Anyway, Diamond Drip, I know it's an unorthodox introduction, and I want you to tell people about what it is you do, what it is you discovered, all that good stuff. But before we go anywhere there, how you doing tonight?
Hey, thank you so much. It is such an honor to be in this container with you right now. I am doing amazing. How are you?
Amazing. See, I don't hear many people say, how you doing? Amazing. That's not usually the response I get. Again, it's going to be a unique kind of energy. We don't get this sort of energy on this show very often. So, I'm a moody SOB. So, and I seem to spread that among the people that I speak to. It happens. But you're unique. You have a very positive outlook. I had an off-air discussion with you, a brief one. And it was really interesting. So let's first tell people where they can go and take a look at you online, and then let's get into your story. I mean, like I said, I might want to know how it is the name Diamond Drip comes about. I might want to know a little bit about your background, your past before discovering, well, the gift that is psilocybin, I might want to know about all that. So let's get into it. First, tell them where they can find your stuff and how they can become educated via your particular shingle on the World Wide Web.
Yeah, thank you. So my name, honestly, anything that you ever want to find me on, I have branded with Diamond Drip. My favorite place to connect with people is actually on LinkedIn. And I do a great bit of education about psilocybin on LinkedIn.
That's strange. I wouldn't have thought that LinkedIn would be a primary place for it, but cool. All right. So look for Diamond Drip anywhere, but LinkedIn might be your preferred way if people wanted to get in touch with you directly.
So yes, I'm always checking LinkedIn every day. You can also find all of my other contacts on my direct website, diamonddripconsulting.com.
Diamond Drip Consulting. So now we got the word consulting in there on the .com. So maybe tell people a little bit about that. What do you consult people about?
Yeah, 100%. So I like to describe what I do by describing why I do it. So when it comes to business advising, I support solopreneurs who have that gift, but they lack the systems and structures to really scale their business to the next level. So they don't know much about like marketing funnels. They maybe never went to a tech class that showed them how to build a website. And so I consult with them on visual communications, digital strategy, and also self-care. Because as solopreneurs, a big part of who we are shows up in our business. And if we're not feeling great mentally, and we're not taking care of ourselves, then that's going to show up in our business. So I talk with people. If they have things going on with them, they can use their whole entire session like a therapy session if they want to.
Okay, so about the whole person, not just as an entrepreneur, you're using the word solopreneur. So I guess what you're saying is you advise people about the best way forward when it comes to being a one-man gang, so to speak, in their own business. Where they're building a business from, I guess, from the ground up usually, or do you get people that are sort of in intermediate stages? Do you start people from scratch, or do you kind of join them already in progress?
So my heart's work lies with the people who kind of know what they're doing. They, you know, have an audience, they have a following, they just have no idea how to monetize it. They're not collecting emails, they're not doing events to really get themselves out there and set themselves up confidently as an expert in their field. Mm-hmm. So I work predominantly with seasoned entrepreneurs, but I devoted a whole course to showing people step by step how to set up a business from scratch, like getting your EIN, getting your LLC, building a website from scratch. All of this is like evergreen material.
Okay. So somebody like me who has had to kind of self-teach themselves how to build. I mean, I built a little radio network. I've got, you know, an online presence. I've got things going. I actually might need your services because the one thing that I'm finding is difficulty with making certain things be monetized, basically, to create income streams off of things that I know are being distributed. I know are making it out there. I mean, I'm listener supported here. You know, so I don't actually have corporate sponsorships. Even the businesses that sponsor it, somebody who's running their own business who is a listener. And I give thank you gifts to the people that support me, and that's it. I don't do anything else. And I haven't, monetization has been a difficult thing for me. So I would be perfect to step in with you and have you give me advice how do I make this part of it work when I've got these other things rolling. I've taught myself how to do a great deal of this. You know, from broadcast to a website construction. Again, I'm not a great webmaster or anything, but it does function. It is a media website. I do distribute media constantly, but I'm having a little trouble creating steady streams of income off of it. So I would be perfect to go to you then, yeah?
100%, yeah. And honestly, I encourage the individuals that I talk to and I built that connection with, I encourage them to take me up on my free session, because at the end of the day, whether you work with me or not, I want to help get you to that next level. So I always promise anyone who does one of those sessions with me that they will leave with either a tool like an actual tool that they can go research and see if it works for them, or an insight that changes their mindset and shifts them into another way of thinking that they maybe, you know, haven't ever in the past.
Well, it looks like I'm going to have to sign up for a couple of free sessions at least to see how that goes. Because I'm telling you, no, literally, I mean, I'm out front and about transparency here. I've got little difficulties with this. And it is the only struggle that's left. I mean, the rest of it, I'm happy with the way a lot of things are running. Like I said, I've educated myself about a great many things with a little bit of help from some friends. You know, I've got a visual issue, so they had to be a little more patient with me to teach me how to broadcast, how to build a website, this kind of thing. But I got that far, and now I just need these little connective tissues to make it all really flow. You know, and I'm doing okay, but I know that I could be doing a lot better, so that's the kind of thing where I think I should probably step in. And I'm using myself as an example here to give people an idea. But I really want to get into the psilocybin. How does this work into it? Is this part of it, or is this a separate story?
In all transparency, I am asking myself that same question, because a lot of the insights that came to me from my most recent mushroom experience, I used in the business model that I made today. But when I try and talk about them both, I maybe lack the marrying terms necessary. It just kind of seems like I talk about psilocybin, but I'm known for business advising. And so marrying the two together, I haven't had that opportunity. This is my first like real opportunity to have to like really marry them together.
Okay. Well, let's do it in real time here in front of the public, right? And see how it goes.
Yeah.
What the hell? I don't believe in nets. All right. Anyway, so let's go for it. All right. Look, I had a serious issue when I was searching for a solution. Okay. Common problem, right? Anybody who's got, an issue that's chronic. And for me, it was PTSD. I didn't know how to relate to anybody about it. Talk therapy, I had tried it when I was younger, but it was really not very successful. And I was just doing my best to cope with it, right? So I discovered that they had made, some interesting progress with people regarding PTSD. I said, your issue is not necessarily PTSD. Maybe we could start with what your issue was. And obviously, you're an intelligent person. You're somebody who can organize your thoughts and things like this. You're clearly somebody who knows how to be productive. Otherwise, you wouldn't be trying to teach other people how to be productive, right? So how about this? What was the problem that caused you to seek the solution that becomes psilocybin in the first place?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with bipolar 2 when I was 14.
Okay.
So, for those of you who don't know, bipolar 2 is different from bipolar 1. So with bipolar 1, the main distinction is that people with bipolar 2 depression, their depressive symptoms are longer. So an example would be someone who's bipolar 1, they will have these long stints of mania, where they're spending money that they don't have. They may be sexually promiscuous. They're just what you think of when you call someone bipolar. It's usually, it looks a lot like that, but their depressive episodes, their lows after their highs, usually are shorter. But with people who have bipolar 2, we have what's called hypomania. And so with that, our extremes maybe don't go as far. So for me, I have, like these moments where I feel like I have a bunch of energy and I can, I can do anything. I can, whatever I put my mind to, I have that optimistic glow about me. I'm listening to music. I enjoy mushrooms, honestly, a lot better when I'm in that hypomanic space. It's something that people with bipolar 2 look forward to, honestly. If it's not an extreme, like you're doing really wild things, people look forward to it. I've seen Reddit threads where people are like, how can I trigger my hypomania? Because the other side of bipolar 2, when you're not having a hypomanic episode, is that you are depressed. You don't want to move. Like, I had days where I literally was just staring at a spot on the floor, and I knew that I should have gotten up because I have a daughter and a family and a business. But I honestly, all of my heart and soul wanted to do in those moments was just lay there and look at that spot on the floor and just, like, seek into nothingness. And I would be that way for weeks. And I, you know, and when it wasn't that, it was just irritability and all of the other symptoms. Yeah.
So the climb and crash that most people would associate with the bipolar sort of general description, what you're saying is that when you do climb, you don't necessarily climb to the same heights, because if you're saying it's hypomania, then that means it's under or below your what people would generally understand as mania. And then your crashes, again, I call it the climb and crash. It's the best way I can do it, because I remember reading about manic depression when I was much younger. And manic depression functioned this way too. That's what they used to call it before they introduced this term bipolar. You know, your crashes just last longer, is what you're saying. But maybe you don't get into the extremes of the highs also. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. No, I'm just trying to make sure I understand. So this obviously was interfering with your consistency, right? Like, where you wanted to be, you know, fairly, you want to be reliable, you want to be consistent in business, in life, as a parent. I'm also a parent. So, you know, one thing is, even if you're sick, even if you're tired, even if you're depressed, quite frankly, the kids are still the kids, and you still got to do what you got to do. So, you know, whether you feel like not wanting to pick your head up off the pillow or off the floor or whatever, there's still things to be done. So you have to face that and drag yourself through that a lot of times, or you surrender and you become, you know, an absentee almost, one way or another. Now, I've suffered from depression, so I understand this. Again, mine was more linked to the PTSD kind of situation. And I suffered from what they called a dysthymic depression for a while, where, you know, I just had a low grade but consistent depression. And that was a constant. Either way, these things are exhausting. And that's really what it came down to for me, is I was unable to sleep at the end of it. I was unable to find any comfort anywhere. And that was it. I was just exhausted. And I would say for a couple of years, I was unable to get consistent sleep or find comfort of any kind. And it's got nothing to do with the people around me or anything else. It was all an internal problem. So I'm guessing, because again, I didn't experience precisely what you did, but I'm guessing that it's a similar kind of experience where you're sort of stuck within yourself, and it's draining to have to constantly deal with this pressure upon you. I mean, I described carrying around PTSD as sort of like having somebody continuously throw wet wool blankets on me, and you know, after a while, you can't move, because there's just too much weight on you. I think you're describing a similar sort of circumstance here, although you might use different descriptors. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
Okay. Well, so you're in that position. It's clearly bothering you. And then what? Did you start to, did somebody show you an article? Did you just, while doing research on something else, encounter this? Or what was the moment there, the catalyst that brought about your awareness of the possibility of using psychedelics for any sort of good in this area?
Yeah, it was actually my best friend. So we would travel together to California, Oregon, and she would always ask about mushrooms. Like, wherever we went that was, like, away, she'd be like, do you have magic mushrooms? Because we would go to, like, dispensaries and things. And we finally found someone who had mushrooms, and I was into cannabis. So I was like, this is what we're here for. Like, you're asking about mushrooms. I don't even know what you're talking about right now. And so we finally found someone who had them, and then it was like, okay, well, now I got to do some research on them, because if I'm going to try these, then I got to know kind of what I'm up against. I couldn't even tell you what articles I read, that led me to just believe that, you know, it was, I honestly, when I found them, I didn't know that they could be used to treat depression. That information came later after my first experience, like, because I kind of babied it my first time. Like, I know we're not, you know, using quantities or anything like that, but it was very minimal, because I only knew what I had seen on TV. So I played it very safe. It was a very meditative experience. No hallucinogens. I didn't hear anything. It wasn't crazy, anything like that. But the insights that I happened upon during that experience, I was like, oh, this could be something. So I did research. I got really interested into mushrooms, and I started microdosing one summer, just to kind of see if maybe, like, microdosing on a consistent basis would help me. I didn't know what I was doing. I ended up stopping. And then, as my business grew and I learned more about, like, psilocybin, from just it being out there in the world, getting article alerts from Google and things like that. Yeah. I happened upon this Red Table Talk episode, which Red Table Talk is the show with Jada Pinkett Smith. And she, like, talks with her mom and her family about, you know, controversial topics a lot of the times. And so psilocybin was one of them.
Well, this is interesting. I mean, let's talk about your mindset, though, just a little bit. You know, was this a recreational thing? Like, I just want to get high? Or were you thinking, I want to feel better? I think this could make me feel better. I mean, because you stated that you had already attempted, you know, cannabis, and I have chronic pain. I tried to use cannabis for chronic pain, did not work for me. But I do advocate for its use. I think it's one of those things that can be used, but I think we're all individuals, and maybe not everybody is predisposed for its use, or maybe you are predisposed for its use, but it's not in the same way that somebody else is. Like, I don't like to, like, I'll smoke a little, but not a lot, you know, and I don't use it for pain because it's not effective, but it did help to take the edge off of some of the emotional issues. And it works differently for everybody, I think. We are all individuals, so nothing is precisely the same, no matter what the chemical makeup is, no matter what the plant's nature is, no matter what, you know. So, but I went into it with a mindset of not recreation at all. This was a big roll of the dice thing for me, and I went in the other direction that you did. I didn't go with safety. I said, you know what, to hell with safety. Trying to play safe and trying to be, you know, easy about it is not getting me anywhere. I went for the more extreme use of it. And I'm not saying that I advise that to anybody. I'm just telling you that it worked for me. But other people have told me that it works in the microdosing and stuff like that. What was your mindset going in, though? Was it more like, I just want to feel better? Or did you have a serious intent to use it therapeutically? Or was it like, screw this, I just want to get high so I don't feel the things I'm feeling? I mean, which, you know, I think those are three separate mindsets. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so the very first time that I did mushrooms, it was very much, I've never done magic mushrooms, and I kind of want to see what's happening. So it was very much recreational, just wanting to see what was happening. I played it small, so I wasn't expecting to get high, but I did have some insights. But what really taught me about its therapeutic use was when I, after the Red Table Talk, I went looking for clinical trials, and literally the stars aligned. Because I found a trial in Maryland at Shepherd Pratt, which is in Baltimore. I'm in College Park, so it's like a 40-50 minute drive, something like that. And it was for my exact diagnosis, which, context, for like 10 years, I was in denial about even having bipolar 2. Like, I was like, no, I'm just depressed. Like, I know my file says bipolar, but like, I'm not actually bipolar. I'm just depressed. Because I didn't really see myself doing, like, the wild, you know, hypomania things. And I definitely didn't see myself doing manic things. And so I had just come to acceptance with my diagnosis, like, 6 months before I found the trial. So for my exact trial, close to me, I applied. And that trial is really what taught me, you know, about the preparation, the intention setting, how your mindset has to be in the right area, making sure that you're not on anything mind altering so that you really can dive fully into the experience. I had to stop smoking for 3 months because I have my medical marijuana card and I use it to help me sleep. It's like the only thing that gets me to sleep and keeps me asleep. And I had to stop smoking for 3 months in order to qualify for the trial. So it was very much medicinal.
Gotcha.
100%.
Yeah. Well, did it involve talk therapy before and during, or was it one of the other? Because I've read about a couple of different trials here for different types of depression. I don't remember reading the exact one on bipolar 2, but I've read a bunch of the studies too and did that before I did what I did. And I saw the potential for it with all types of depression. I mean, it just seemed to go across the board. So it was like, well, depression, it certainly seems to have some effect on that, according to the clinical trials. And again, according to testimonies of just friends who said, look, you know what? I didn't go to a clinical trial. I just did this. And I took all that in as best I could. So you were sort of doing this and you got lucky to find, you know, somebody that would, a place where they were conducting a trial near you and, you could go and be in a completely controlled, environment then.
Yeah. So the trial was 15 weeks total. And it included talk therapy before because you had to meet your dosing therapist beforehand so that when you're, you know, the dosing experience is a 3-day thing. So they let me do quite a few of the meetings virtually, but there were some ones like drug testing, for example, to make sure that you're not on anything mind altering. That had to be in person. So, and then of course, when I met with my dosing therapist, oftentimes it was in person, but the 3-day experience itself, that's in person. So you go the day before, they drug test you one last time. They have you meet with the dosing therapist. They take you down to the actual room that you're going to be in so you can like familiarize yourself with the space. They let me put the headphones on, listen to the playlist a little bit so that I would, you know, be kind of familiar with that as well. And it wouldn't just be like this brand new experience, nerves and everything the day of. The day of, I pretty much went to sleep just to get up and go trip. Because they did it early in the morning. It was like 8 in the morning is when I actually took the capsules. They found a way to synthetically take out the psilocybin out of the mushroom and put it into these 5 little itty bitty cute teeny tiny capsules. And then the day after you go in person to talk with your therapist and unpack the experience. And then you meet after that, like, you know, on a semi-scheduled basis. To unpack and continue to put those insights into your life.
Okay. Well, did you get any input on the playlist or did they have pre-selected sound for you to, you know, engage in? Because I know I had a heightened sense of sound when I did this. And by the way, I tried the synthetic, you know, stuff on the street when I was a kid and all that and did not gain any good insights out of it. I had a terrible time, actually. So, you know, for me, I was walking into this like, I don't care if it melts my brain. This has to change, was my attitude, as the circumstance I was in must change. And I didn't care if it destroyed my brain. It has to be done because I can't live like this anymore. You know, so I was in that state of mind. But the music was very important. And I found that different types of music that I enjoy all types normally. But different types of music allowed for different experiences. Did you have any sort of input on that, or did they pre-select your playlist?
Yeah, no, there's no input on it whatsoever. It's a very scientific. They developed the playlist with science so that it rises when it knows that you might be feeling some euphoria and those, like, you know, happy feelings, and it, you know, drops to less beats per minute when you're in that more introspective space. They don't even let you know, like, what's on the playlist. Like, if I wanted to just meditate with some of the songs to like take me back to the experience, they don't, it's very controlled. There is a John Hopkins playlist on Spotify that is very close to the one that they use in the John Hopkins trial. And I had the privilege on March 1st to give it a go and see, you know, if it was kind of the same experience. And I can attest that the songs do take you on the, as I like to call them, on the song journeys, the same way that they do in the trial experience.
Okay, so how about we describe a little bit of that, give people an idea what that was like, because you came in, I mean, were you suffering from an active sort of depressive state when you went in, or what was your mindset when you went in? I mean, might have been still a little nervous about it, or this is going to be weird, I'm kind of handing myself over to people, they're going to keep me in a room for 3 days. You might have had an odd attitude about it. What was your mindset like going into the experience the first time?
I wasn't super nervous, just because I had had recreational experiences before, so I knew nothing like crazy was going to happen.
Okay.
But I was kind of, you know, like some stuff, like when I went in, I wasn't sure how it was going to work. I had never set intention. And so, for context, the intention that I set for myself that time was to be a little less hard on myself, because I was very much, and still kind of am sometimes, like type A, like everything has to be perfect. If I make a to-do list, everything has to get crossed off of it that day, because what do we do a to-do list for? And I was just really hard on myself. And in setting intention, I actually was able to gain some self-compassion that still serves me to this day.
Excellent. Okay, so let's talk about that and coming back into, you know, look, for 3 days, you obviously weren't going to try and conduct any business while you're in the hospital room or, you know, the clinical room, whatever. So, you know.
It's just one day. Yeah, it's just one. Oh, sorry. Okay, that might have been confusing. You go there the day before for a few hours. The day of, they keep you for 8 hours because they legally have to. You get to go home and, like, journal and stuff, and then you go back the next day.
Sorry. Oh, okay, okay. I thought they kept you for 3 days. I'm sorry.
No.
All right. No, well, hey, look, you know, it is possible that they could run, you know, a series of these on you for 3 days. I don't know what the technique is in this particular situation. For me, I did it like I broke it up by, like, a week at a time and did three sessions you know, 1 week after the other, on a particular day when I would make sure that I cleared everything away. I had nothing else that I would have to do, for at least 4 hours before and 8 hours after, and during the time, obviously. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, this was my organizational principle, but they did it differently. Okay. Fair enough. So what do you come out of it with? I mean, look, the day after or whatever, or the follow-ups, okay, let's unpack what it is that you were experiencing personally, because only you are in your own head at that, you know, at that time. So how did you relate to it afterwards? I mean, what was your feeling on it? How did you take that forward and then sort of rejoin the world, so to speak?
Yeah. The things that I gained out of the clinical trial experience, because like I said, I did a recreation and that gave me different insights, but the clinical trial experience, that self-compassion is one of those things that, like, I sort of have a mantra, but it's more like a silent mantra, and it's not anything fancy. It's literally just go with the flow, because I was keeping myself to these ridiculous timetables of trying to get things done in, like, really short amounts of time, because I'm an entrepreneur and I want to do it all. So I was setting myself up with these, like, really, really steep timetables. And so to literally just have moments where I think to myself, no one else knows what you're doing but you. Like, no one's expecting this. Like, just literally have those conversations with myself and tell me that it's okay. Like, I'm doing a lot as it is. People all the time tell me how busy I am. But it's one of those things where, like, you can know you're busy and feel like you're not getting anything done. But this is like knowing I'm busy and knowing that I'm moving towards the right direction. And that's so helpful. Another really powerful insight that I got was to spend more time with my daughter. I had this moment in the trip where it was like weird. We shifted perspectives a couple of times. So like I became her, like I was in her like child's body. And then I was like somehow like outside looking at her, and she was like crying out for me to like play with her. Like that's all she wanted, was just for her to like have someone to play with. And I remember the time in my childhood when I just, because I grew up an only child, and I really just wanted somebody to play with me. And my mom was gone. Like, for her, I'm in the house because it's a home office. So she thinks I'm available. I want to play. But, like, my mom was gone. So, like, I remember vividly, like, wanting someone to play with and not having anyone. And so when I had that experience where I was her and then I was looking at her, whatever, it's weird in that, you know, psychedelic space. And I made a point to myself, like, to make time for her. Like, even if I just stop work for 30 minutes and just spend a little time with her, she's going to remember those times more than, like, whatever dream that I'm, like, working to build where we get to, like, spend a whole day together. Like, that's the dream where we have, like, more than one day where we spend hours with each other. Mm-hmm. But the 30-minute sessions count, too. So those are just, like, a couple of the ones. And I just... The meditation, because I do sometimes meditate, it helps keep them close. But mm-hmm. honestly, I think the thing that's kept the insights close to me is that, so like I said, I stopped smoking for the trial because they didn't want you on anything mind altering. Mm-hmm. As soon as they said there were no more drug tests, I went immediately back to smoking so that I could get some quality sleep. And so they, when it came to the week and they asked me if I had added any medicines to my regimen and I told them I had started smoking cannabis again, they were worried because cannabis is a depressant. So I'm now effectively putting back the thing that I feel cured of into my body. And so I was like, no, because I'm still going to smoke because I value the sleep that I get and need as an entrepreneur, right. But I will microdose. And so now I microdose 4 times a week. And so I think that constant, just even in a minimal way, that activation of the dormant serotonin receptors and the fact that microdosing helps you connect new neural pathways, I'm able to really retain the insights and even things from like way back when that I even forgot I learned. I'm able to retain and pull information from these places, these wells within my own brain. Mm.
Well, look, I'm going to take a little break with you here, and we'll just settle back for a moment with the information you've given us so far. But I want to close this segment just real fast with one last question, which is, and I'm just, your opinion is what I'm looking for here. I think that, look, you have found a path, and I think that this could be helpful to a lot of people, and they might say to themselves, oh, what? Now I'm on something else that I got to take all the time. Maybe not. I'm thinking that, you know, others might find it valuable to use it differently even, and there might be multiple ways which somebody could apply it. Now, why do I say this? Because my application is nothing like yours. And I know it was helpful. And I take your word that it was helpful for you. Also, cannabis, I wouldn't say, is always a depressant. You know, I know that's the way they classify it. But, you know, not necessarily. Everybody's a little different. And slightly different strains do different things to different people and different amounts. And, you know, again, I'm one of these guys who takes, like, you know, 2 hits off of a joint. And I'm good. That's fine. I see other people, you know, they smoke, God, what I wouldn't smoke over the course of 8 months when they go, you know, and they do that in a night. Yeah. And I go, whoa, okay. But I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm not saying anybody's wrong. Matter of fact, I think that since we are all individuals, we can all find a way to utilize this. And it is natural. It is a good thing. I mean, I know you use the artificial, one that they developed and put into a pill, but not me. I just had the, you know, just the straight up shrooms. Some of these things, everybody is an individual. So the way that you're applying it or the way that I'm applying it might not necessarily be the same for everybody. So, you know, somebody else might find something, a completely different way of utilizing it than what you're describing or what I've described in the past. I want to get to the core of what it does when we come back, if you don't mind. But what is your opinion about that? Do you think I'm right that I'm saying, you know, basically everybody needs to customize this for their own purposes? And what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. 100%. You have to make it your own. Like, if I didn't smoke, who knows? I might not need to microdose as much. But what I know is that it does the same thing as an antidepressant, except you don't feel numb. That's what I know.
No, definitely. And that's the one thing about that. God, I hate pharmaceutical companies. I hate all that stuff. And I gotta tell you, I find most of it to be poisonous. I know there are some people that need it, but man, I think that we can all find a much better path through much more natural solutions when it comes to the issues that we face. Diamond Drip is with me. We're gonna tell you more about where to find her online again. And continue on with this discussion about her experience with psilocybin as the Ocelli Effect continues. Stick around.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Uncle, I'll bet you remember the time when Benjamin Fulford said that the Asian Secret Society was going to dispatch ninjas to take out the Illuminati to change the entire world for the better.
That is never going to happen. That never did.
It never did, did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of false promises.
It's fools! I can't say more.
We better not say and be polite. But there are no false promises at the Ocelli.com radio network.
That's exactly it. Not. It's truth, the point, right to the point. And this is what I like. Straight to the point.
Ocelli.
Ocelli.com.
Listen now.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Segment two of this Tuesday night Ocelli Effect now happening here at Ocelli.com. Welcome to you. Quick reminder that if you are a supporter of the network and you drop in $50 or more, those swag bags are going to start going out. So get in on that, and if you don't know about it, just read some of the show notes, and also read the show notes for tonight's guest, Diamond Drip. Now, she did say you can go find her on LinkedIn. That's a nice, easy, responsive place for her, but also Diamond Drip. What is the website's proper name? I know I have it bookmarked, but what is the website address again?
For sure. It's DiamondDripConsulting.com.
DiamondDripConsulting.com. See, I didn't want to say it and screw it up. So good. DiamondDripConsulting.com. And, again, you know, she's got a primary business, but we are focused on the psilocybin issue here. So let's take it forward. All right. We've talked about the clinical trial. We've talked about, what you've done afterwards, returning to smoking the cannabis or taking cannabis again one way. I don't know. Maybe you do the gummies. I don't know. But, I smoke a little now and then. I find that some of the edibles are a little bit too much sometimes. They hang around too long. So, you know, I like the very temporary. I just, take a couple of drags off a joint and I'm good. But look, forget about me. Let's take this forward. So you get some new insights. You get some stuff going here. You get a little bit of after therapy, et cetera. They're concerned, depressive. All right. All of that is what it is. Now, you go home. You rejoin your life. You're going to go forward. You're going to continue with your business. Now, how do you take this experience into your business practices, and how do you take it into the rest of your life? I mean, you talked about your daughter a little bit, and look, my whole experience is way different because I had to go through a lot of ugliness that I was really suppressing brutally. You know, you're not doing that. You're looking for positive answers. I, at first, had to, like, purge myself of a bunch of horrible things. Again, PTSD, I had it for a reason. I've had it since childhood. You know, and I'm not talking about this new clinical description of it. I'm talking about I was first diagnosed with it in, I want to say, 1983. Okay? And, yeah, so I carried that around with very little treatment, very little anything. Not good. Long, long time. Tried to self-medicate all different ways. But that required a clearing out of a bunch of just terrible garbage. Now, you had a depression that was hanging on you, and now maybe you feel it lifted because why? Did you lose control of something? Did you gain control of something? What really happened? How would you describe that?
Yeah, I would say that the insights in terms of, like, the self-compassion, they hit harder. So with what it helped me gain, it was like a weight had been lifted. Like, all of my, how hard I am on myself, all of the extra pressure that I put on myself, when I gained self-compassion, that just lessened. It felt like I could breathe. I remember when I was going to get my daughter after workout, I had microdosed that day, and it was a sunny day. I was actually able to enjoy the sun on my face as I drove to pick up my daughter. The second main thing that it did, in addition to the self-compassion, was it helped me step outside of my ego and into empathy. Hmm. When you microdose, when you go through a hero dose, which is, you know, whatever they say it is, I think it's like 5 grams or something like that. When you go through an experience with magic mushrooms, your default mode network, it lessens, and you're able to feel that's why people report feeling like a connectedness, why they feel like they want to go hug a tree and they feel the life. Like, your ego lessens and you're able to really connect in a way that you never could, whether that's with other people, whether that's with the universe. Like, you're just able to connect on a different level. And so, especially in my business, because a lot of what I do is giving entrepreneurs the confidence to really step forward as their best, most passionate selves in their business. Like, that requires me to have a certain level of empathy and understanding for what it is that they're going through.
Well, let me run this by you then, because I'm now hearing a commonality. I've contrasted you and me a bit, but now I'm hearing a commonality here, and you're wording it differently than I would. So let me just see if we can come together on this.
Okay.
You know, I felt as though, all right, whether it's depression or it's PTSD or it's bipolar, look, there are certain things that are not caused by you, okay, that are part of either, you know, a chemical situation or an experiential situation that is weighing upon you. These are not things that are within your control. But as you attempt to cope with them, a lot of times you create things. you add pressure to yourself. You make it worse, really. I mean, this is just one of the things that people do when they have a chronic condition like this that affects them emotionally, okay? That's my opinion, but, you know, maybe you think I'm wrong. But one of the first things to lift away in my mind, which, by the way, I did way excess of a hero dose first time. But anyway, the thing was that the first thing that I was able to remove was the things that I was doing that were sabotaging me personally, me sabotaging myself. Now, this is not something that most people do knowingly, but I had the ability to see that I was doing that. And I could work against it. And I also felt that connectivity. And anybody who's observed me said that, you know, look, you were expressing almost no emotion before in a lot of personal situations. Now it's like, you know, you can again. And I felt that as well. I felt a freedom. But the first thing that I got set free from in my mind is those things that I was doing that were pretty much, you know, I was kneecapping myself. I was causing problems for myself on top of what was coming at me that, again, I'm not responsible for, I didn't cause, but I was adding to it. Did you find that you were able to subtract that? Is that what you mean by being in empathy and, being more understanding and forgiving of yourself, this kind of sentiment? Is that what you mean by that, or am I misunderstanding?
100%. No, you're understanding me 100% correct, yes.
Okay. Well, then, see, now that's a huge thing. A lot of people don't realize they're sabotaging themselves. They're actually causing the effect from whatever it is. Again, it could be whatever, however you want to categorize it. Go to the DSM and give yourself 10 different terms. It's irrelevant. The thing is that a lot of times people add to the problem. And they don't realize they're adding to the problem themselves because now they're getting down on themselves. A most simple thing is you're mad at yourself for being depressed. So now you're pissed off and you're like giving yourself crap about this is ridiculous. I can't believe that I don't even know why this is happening. There's no reason for me to be depressed. Why am I depressed now? That's a lot of energy that you're sinking into getting down on yourself for being depressed or for being angry or for being on guard or for being closed off or whatever it is. And you're adding to the situation. And I'm not just saying you, Diamond Drip. I'm saying, you know, the general you, right? Yeah. Isn't this one of the things that all of a sudden, quite frankly, as soon as you begin to experience those effects, you can much more clearly recognize that that is something that you are, like, the part you're doing to yourself. What do you think?
Yeah, you are. You're able to notice a lot about yourself. Like, even now, I consider myself cured of depression, but bipolar 2 is a hormonal imbalance in the brain, and once a month I get an influx of hormones into my body. And so I go back into what feels like depression. I'm irritable. I'm depressed. I don't feel like doing anything. And I'm able to, because I microdose in these spaces, I'm able to catch moments where I lash out a little bit more over something that maybe my daughter did. And I go, wait, you just kind of overreacted a little bit. You might want to recheck how you handled that. And it allows you to notice, you know, just little small, subtle things because you are so connected. Like, I guess I'm connected to her energy change, right? If I'm irritated and I yell and then she's happy and then I feel something shift, I was connected to that. So I calm down and I'm able to, if it was something that I yelled at her about, like picking something up off the floor, I'll say something like, in empathy, I understand that I probably startled you a little bit, but mommy was frustrated because I asked you to pick this up off the floor 4 times. And this is now the 5th time that I'm walking past this. So I was a little frustrated and she's able to understand that, yes, I got mad, but we're good. You just were frustrated.
Right. See, I had the over... Okay, maybe you don't know... do you know anything about PTSD at all?
A little, yeah.
Okay, so I had the overreaction rage responses sometimes, right? I was the kind of guy who could stub his toe and then put his hand through the wall because I stubbed my toe on the door jamb, right? Yeah. And it's not because I'm a violent person by nature. It was an automatic response. Immediately I got control, but I had no control over that. I'm telling you now, that was something that just used to, it was like a reflex, right? And you'll find that sometimes there's combative natures that people end up with the PTSD. It's a self-defense mechanism. I know it is. And I understood all that psychologically, still could not prevent myself from auto-reacting in that way, right? With this experience, though, I was able to gain a perspective on it. It all of a sudden, I got control over it. It just came to me that I was able to control it. Now, that sounds really obvious and stupid. Of course you can control yourself, stupid. Yeah, I know, but I'm telling you, not from inside where I was sitting could I see that. Until I was able to kind of see all the way around. You know what I mean? And I understood that I was overreacting to things. And yeah, I've had things come up since where it's like, you know what? I would get angry, but I'm not going to. And I have a choice about that now a lot more than I used to. Yeah. That's an interesting piece of control. And yeah, you're more empathetic and you're feeling out. You're clearly able to have a heightened sense of everything with this. And so I want to know, and you know, because we're going toward just about the end of where our discussion is going to be for tonight. Maybe we'll revisit this on another show. I'll invite you back. But I want to take it a little further, and again, you know, talk about your business, because you've obviously, you know, okay, you talked about how to integrate it with interacting with children, and look, again, they're all individuals too. So you know, no matter what your advice column says, it might not apply depending as your child is not the child they're writing about in the advice column. But look, you gain your own way, and you figure it out your own way as per the way that you have to as a parent, anyhow. But let's put that parenting part aside. It's not that it's not important. It's just I want to go somewhere else. How did you apply this to business? How did it change the way you were doing business or interacting with others who maybe are not, you know, so emotionally tied to you, but in another way, you know what, they're important too, because well, they're part of your livelihood, they're part of what happens. You know, what about that part of it? How did you take it further from a business standpoint, and how did you come back in with those new insights? You keep using the word insights. How did you take those insights and apply them business wise?
Oh, wow. So my last trip, one of the things that I went in knowing was bugging me, didn't expect it to come up in the trip, but it did. I had a really great open rate on my emails. Like, it was in the 60s, which is really good. Mm-hmm. But people weren't clicking. That conversion for, like, why they even opened the email in the first place, they weren't doing it. And so it came up in the trip for me. And I really had to get honest with myself. And I was like, because you're not giving them a reason to. So I reworked my entire new marketing sequence, which included videos to build connection with people. Because what I was doing before was giving them, like, regurgitated information from, like, Google and stuff. Right. Because I was scared and being selfish, whatever my entrepreneur mind was. And I didn't want to give too much away. And so in this new, like, marketing that I do, I lead with value first. Mm-hmm. Because that's going to be the thing that people resonate with. They're not going to resonate with the fact that you said that they need to create a budget, that they need to have a business plan. Like, they're going to resonate with you walking them through what's a lean canvas. Because it's much easier to do one of those than a 15-page business plan. Mm-hmm. So in the way that I operate, leading with value instead of being in that, like, scarcity mindset, like, if I give too much away, then, like, what will they buy? Like, no, you have so much to give. And so even with that, it came a little bit of that, like, self-compassion that, like, I used to be really hard on myself about even my value. And so that comes into play. But honestly, it's one of those things where, because I am just so looking to build connection with other people, mm-hmm. at the beginning of the show, I offered a Passion Meet Strategy breakthrough call, and I plan to follow up with you with that link in an email, because I honestly want to help every single person that I talk to, whether they choose to work with me or not, because connection is what the world is missing a little bit, and we're only getting worse with AI. Mm-hmm. So connecting with other humans that definitely was something that it really became really clear to me that I need to really connect with people.
See, but right there, that's your connective tissue. That's the thing that you were missing. Because the bottom line is, whether it's business or it's personal relationships, right? It's about the interaction. It's about how you present and how you receive things if you're really, truly interacting with people. And yes, indeed, with social media and with AI and all this other stuff, we have all this artificiality built around everything nowadays. And the commerce, whether it's emotional or it's financial, the commerce that goes on now is through all of these different filters. If you can make that more organic and realize that, look, the way that you lead with value, like you do in a relationship, right? What do? Let's just say, you know, you're dating even. What do you want to do? You want to put up your best first impression. You know what I'm saying? And the way that you do that, and the way that you come to a clear understanding right off the bat in a relationship, it usually leads to a much clearer understanding in a relationship, whether it's business or it's personal, right? So the two things are actually the same. Obviously, you know, dollars and cents is not the same as, you know, the currency of emotion per se, but they do work on similar principles. So why not? That's your connective tissue. That's the way I see it. I mean, that's what I'm hearing from you as we go through this. So, again, I want to give you an opportunity, though, to tell people about your business, what it is you do. And, you know, maybe we could revisit this at a later date. But I'm thinking there's a lot of food for thought here, because I think it's very interesting to consider that whenever you're involved in exchanges, okay, whether you're exchanging, you know, digital currency or, again, the emotional and almost spiritual currency that you do in your personal life, I think that having clarity about that and having full knowledge about the way that you're presenting, the way that you're interacting, is the most important thing. You think I'm off base about this?
I don't think you're off base at all.
So there we have it. So Diamond Drip, diamonddripconsulting.com. That's where they can go. They find you on LinkedIn. Maybe you could email me some other links and things. I'll put them in the show notes so you guys can follow up with this discussion from tonight. I definitely want you guys to take a look at, and by the way, just so you know, she was on a list of over 100 people that, no, this is true though, that over 100 people signed up to be a guest on the show. And I have only had about 5 of you so far. And the only reason why I didn't get her sooner is because she was busy. That's the truth. But you know, only the most interesting people do I want to bring forth to you guys. And I think Diamond Drip's story is extremely interesting. It's a different methodology from where I visited. The gift, again, that I believe that it's a gift. You know, you want to talk about God? Well, I have my differences with people about God and the Creator and the creation all together. But here's the thing. If there's stuff in nature that can provide us with a better way to live, I see no reason why we should not engage with it, use it. You believe in your Bible, fine. You know what? All the plants on the earth, all the seeds, all this stuff is here for you to use. And you only have to read Genesis to find that out. And it doesn't matter if it's cannabis or if it is the fungus that grows because, well, psilocybin is a mushroom. All of these things are presented to us and gifted to us by Mother Earth, God, whatever you want to call it, by the creation, no matter who you think created it. Very simple, and I think we should all be free to utilize these things and do it to live our best lives. Any argument with me there, Diamond Drip?
No argument.
So there you have it, diamonddripconsulting.com, and I want to thank you for coming on and telling us and sharing this part of your life with us tonight. Hopefully someone will take away from this and decide that they might have a solution in sight for the things that they are suffering from, because I know just interacting with people through emails, through occasional phone calls, this kind of stuff, who listen to the show, I know that a lot of us are suffering. And to me, if there is a simple, natural solution that could provide us a pathway forward, we should take advantage of it. DiamondDripConsulting.com. Diamond Drip, thanks so much for being on the Ocelli Effect tonight.
It was an honor. Thank you.
And you guys, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, remember this. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are the effect. Good night.